From WUOT News, this is a special holiday edition of The Method. Around this time each year, we like to look back on the year that was and some of the fun science stories that we brought you here on The Method and talk about why they were so interesting to us. When I say us, it's because I'm joined here in the studio by my partner in crime on The Method, Chrissy Kuiper, who's been a contributor to this program since it started and an integral part of getting The Method on the air each month. Chrissy, happy holidays. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
It's so nice to have you. I'm not just a disembodied voice in a studio. I got a friend today. So we're going to look back on the year that was. Starting at the very beginning of the year, one of the most interesting stories that you did, species survival programs at the Knoxville Zoo. Tell us more about that.
In the last couple hundred years, we've seen the number of animals in lots of ways all over the world decline. The SSPs, the Species Survival Plans, are an attempt to slow that decrease. In the clip we're about to hear, our curators are Sarah Glass and Terry Cannon.
In some cases, those areas just may not exist anymore, but you want to make sure you're putting back a behaviorally competent and genetically accurate animal.
The hope is and that places will protect their natural environment, will protect the habitat of these animals so that there's a population living free and thriving. At least we have this repository of the potential to make a difference and reintroduce them if ever there's a chance.
For many animals, the species survival plans are the last chance.
From January, we skip ahead to the summer months. In June, about the midpoint of the year, you brought us an interesting story about feral cats. And I kind of wondered, well, what the heck is the science-y part about feral cats? But it turns out there's a seasonal connection there.
Well, for one thing, the summertime is what veterinarians and animal workers around the country called Kittenpalooza, because it's the warm summer months. It's the time that cats reproduce like mad. Another science element is the collaboration among Young Williams Animal Center, the University of Tennessee College of Veterinary Medicine, and the National Institute for Mathematical and Biological Synthesis, or NIMBUS. They came up with a formula they use to see how many cats are in a feral cat colony. I spoke to Teresa Fisher, who's the program director of the Companion Animal Initiative of Tennessee.
We wanted to get a formula that would tell us how many spays and neuters you need to do in a specific colony. So what we did was we looked at all the data that we had. We take in feral cats and we spay and neuter them, and then the caretakers put them back where they found them. We add in factors such as, we only looked at the females, and we add in factors for like strays or people dumping their cats, amount of kittens being born a year, amount of kittens that die every year. So we put that into a formula, and it was literally about a 7-page mathematical formula. And it told us that we need to at least target 60% of a colony each year in order to see a decline in that colony overall, targeting how many we would have to spay in order to get a decline in the population. We would like zero population growth, and then we would like to eradicate the colony. But a lot of factors go into that as well, big one being humans.
Do you have any idea how many colonies we're looking at just in Knox County?
When we did this study, we took a survey of all of the caretakers we've been working with, and we estimated at over 400 colonies just in Knox County.
Well, over the last year, you had some great stories, too. One of them, early in the year, I guess it was February.
In February.
Was an interview about sleep cycles and how we're affected when we switch the time back from standard time to daylight time.
Right. You know, twice a year when we change our clocks, the spring forward and fall back, it actually has a biological effect on our sleeping patterns, not just for that Sunday, the day the time change takes place. And to learn more about that, I talked with Teresa Lee. She's the dean of the College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Tennessee, but she's also a sleep psychologist. And she had a lot of interesting things to say about how the time change twice a year is really a little bit like jet lag. Biologically, they're essentially the same thing.
The only difference between the daylight savings times changes and jet lag is the size of the shift. So yes, when we go to California, it's a 3-hour shift. When we go to Europe, it's a 3 to 6 hour shift, depending on when you're going. And the rule of thumb is that people generally take about 1 day per hour of shift to recover the most of the system. And the bigger the shift, if you're traveling, the longer it takes.
Is there anything that people can do say, in advance of the time shift. Anything we can do to try to minimize those effects?
In our culture, being 30 to 50% of people are running around sleep deprived all the time. So adding one more hour of sleep deprivation makes it worse. So when you know that you're going to have to lose an hour, it would be good to go to bed earlier. There's really not much else you can do. You'll recover quicker if you get out and experience morning light. And at the end of the day, the end of the day light as the sun sets. We're most sensitive to the setting effects of light at dawn and dusk.
Well, we had a couple of different stories about fossils over the last year, but one of them, which was great, was Fossil Day at McClung Museum here on UT campus.
These budding paleontologists and archaeologists were all about 8, 9, or 10 years old, but they're very, very sharp. It was fascinating to go over to the McClung Museum and hear what they were learning about. And this is not just a lecture series with slides and a projector and worksheets and stuff. It is very hands-on. That's the emphasis. They get to touch fossils, make fossils. And it was a perfect example of the method bringing this kind of story to all of our listeners, because you kind of feel like you're there. You get to hear from the kids themselves. And that was really the most gratifying part of doing the story, was listening to what they had to say.
Now, point with your hand. What about direction? Which direction are they going?
One's going that way.
My name is Olivia, and I am 10. I really like archaeology and learning about new things.
Do you want to be a paleontologist or an archaeologist when you grow up?
I want to be an archaeologist.
What do you think you'll do?
Dig.
That's a good answer.
Anybody else want to tell us anything about those?
I think they were meat eaters. That's my hypothesis.
Yeah, me too.
And there you have it, a look back on the year that was through the eyes and ears of the method. It was a great 2014, and we hope to bring you some really interesting stories in 2015 as well to keep this train rolling. Chrissy Kuiper, thank you so much for all the work you did in 2014. I look forward to working with you next year, too.
It was a pleasure. I can't wait to see what we come up with next year.
Oh, me too. And thanks to all of you as well. Happy holidays from all of us at The Method.